Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's the first trading day of 2006, Tuesday, January the 3rd. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. In agricultural news, DR CAFTA was set to take effect last Sunday, but that did not happen. There's strong speculation the Bush administration will ask Congress to cut the budget again for fiscal year 2007, and that may mean a tighter ag budget again. And USDA's chief economist is not optimistic about the 2006 growing season. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. Well, just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a look at the agricultural weather forecast. And in between, we'll hear a feature from NPR's Greg Allen. He takes a look at how farmers in the United States are diversifying their land holdings by investing in Brazil. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Chicago, on this first trading day of the year, a Tuesday, futures finished like this. The March contract in the wheat pit at 346, up 3.75, rather 6.75. And the May future at 355.5, up 6.75. Kansas wheat, March contract 390.5, up 3.5 cents. From the Board of Trade corn pit, March contract $2.20, up 4.25. May futures 228.5. They were up 3.5 in July contract at 236, up 4 cents. December futures at 251.5, up 3.25. Soy complex now, January beans finished like this, 617.5 in the nearby contract, up 15.5 cents. March futures, 628.5, up 15. May futures at 638.75, up 16.75. And the November beans for next year, 645.25, up 9.75. January bean meal, 198.20, up 90. January bean oil at 22.96. That was up 166 for the day. Feeder cattle from the Mercantile Exchange off 97.5 cents at 114.27.5, and February live cattle at 96.37.5 unchanged. Lean hogs down 62.5 cents at 64.65. If you'd like to know what the trading range last year for soybeans on the lead option was, we have that. That courtesy Dave Dickey, your director of ag programming here, $7.37. The top for last year's lead option, 498.5 in the bean pit was the low. Lead corn 260 and the low at 186. That's a look at those numbers for 2005. In a moment, we'll talk about the numbers for 2006 with Wayne Nelson.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
And Wayne joins us now from his office there in Newmarket, Indiana. Hi, Wayne. Good afternoon to you.
Well, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about this marketplace in the bean pit, 15 and a half cent rally. I saw that that was on inflationary fears. Is that right?
Well, I think, you know, we saw a lot of purchasing in gold, silver, cocoa, coffee. The dollar being sold off. You know, some tremendous gains across the board, as well as the commodity pits. It seemed to be regular funds along with, not flavored as much by the index funds as we've been told along the way. The early report last night, as we come in and looked at the weather forecast, said that they got some decent rains in South America. And then when they reassess things, they're saying that central Argentina did not get much and doesn't have much forecast till the end of the week. But in the 7 to 12 forecast, looks to be getting some, but the beans really caught fire out of the box this morning. You know, worked higher. We had over a 5 cent closing trading range on the beans here today, so quite a bit of volatility there.
And on the fun side of this, is it possible that they simply got out before the end of the year to even up the books, and now they're back in?
Oh, You know, you could say that, but they weren't getting out in the very last minute of the trade on Friday, as the last 2 minutes were basically the most actively traded of the day, but it didn't take near as many. We're not sure whether they did or didn't. Once again, Carr was one of the big buyers today, seemed to be the one that seems to be pushing this market higher when it needs a little strength here that way. But, you know, fundamentally, as we look at South America, there seems to be some timely rains down there, but they're... is a little bit of worry that through this week, if the temperatures go back up, that we could even see a little damage to some of the Argentine corn crop because of moisture or a lack of moisture and some high temperatures. But it sure looks like Brazil's picked up, and they've had just about ideal weather there, and our attaché down there is actually talking about some increased yields over our last estimates as to what it was at this point. So it's basically all a CRB fund inflationary type rally that did happen today, but technically very strong. And we look, and also if the setup is right and that the small trader is short.
Let's take a look at this. And if technically the setup is good now, what's the next stop on the way up for both the corn and the beans?
Well, I think, you know, as we look at some of our next resistance levels along the way here, I think that we go like to 24.5 on the on the Jan beans. Here's our next stop, looking things that way. You know, as the corn, the March corn, I would have to say we're probably looking at 224. So, you know, basically along the way, very strong closes today. Technically, we've got the small traders, the one that's be in trouble. And, you know, where will he quit bleeding and, you know, buy out of, get out of his position and liquidate here? That's going to be the question, and see what we can run here.
And then I made note that the January bean oil was up 166 for the day. What was just inflationary fears there as well?
Well, I think that we saw when they're on the deliveries, we finally saw a strong stopper come in, ADM come in and stop the oil, and there was a place, there were quite a few shorts that did come popping out of that, and the strong stopper sure didn't hurt anything in there.
A quick note on the Mercantile Exchange, please.
The Mercantile Exchange, hogs dived hard, but bellies dug in there strong. The cattle just holding their own, just a very quiet day over there. You know, we look for some increased beef movement, but all in all, the cattle hung in there pretty good considering what the hogs did.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
I think, you know, watch what the funds do tomorrow. We'll see if we can put 3 days together upwards and then probably see a little bit of a setback.
We appreciate it, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Joins us here on the closing and the opening market reports on Tuesdays.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible in part by a grant from Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. For more information, call 866-837-9027.
At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us for a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Mike Sola forecast for tonight calls for mostly cloudy skies across the two-state region. A few areas of light rain, lows ranging from 32 in northwestern Illinois to 43 in southeastern Indiana. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy skies, some scattered showers in the northern and central sections. Highs tomorrow from 36 in northwestern Illinois to 56 in the south. Dave Dickey will be here in just a moment to take a look at today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, South Korea says officials there and in the U.S. could begin formal talks on beef trade issues on January 9th. Earlier, South Korea's Vice Agriculture Minister Lee Myung-soo said future talks would comprehensively examine the science and risk management in dealing with mad cow disease. USDA Secretary Mike Johann says the signals coming out of South Korea are promising for the resumption of U.S. beef trade sooner rather than later.
I did have an opportunity to meet with South Korea's ag minister. Our discussion went very well. In fact, the next day, we received word from South Korea that they wanted to follow that up. So J.B. Penn left Hong Kong and went to South Korea. Discussion went very well there. So we're optimistic that that market will come back online. I can't give an exact date because we still have some process to work through there.
South Korea's Agriculture Ministry Advisory Committee said last month that U.S. beef could be considered safe if tougher inspection and quarantine measures are taken. Talks are also underway with Canada on the same issue, and the process of resuming Canadian beef imports will follow a timetable similar to the one for the United States. Treasury Secretary John Snow says the U.S. could be unable to pay its bills beginning early this year unless Congress raises the government's borrowing authority, which is now capped at $8.18 trillion. With the House not scheduled to return to Washington until January 31st, it will be February before Congress can act on Snow's warning. Central American and U.S. officials had hoped the Central American Free Trade Agreement would take effect on Sunday, but none of the region's countries have passed the necessary legal and regulatory reforms, delaying indefinitely the start date for the historic union that will tear down trade barriers between the U.S., Central America, and the Dominican Republic. Honduras, El Salvador, and Guatemala are now aiming to meet the entry requirements by February 1st. Nicaragua says it probably won't join until March, while the Dominican Republic says it won't be ready until July 1st. Bob Bowman is chairman of the National Corn Growers Association Joint Trade Policy A-Team. Bowman says the DR-CAFTA delay is not of great concern.
People who understand trade know that things don't happen maybe as fast as we'd like, but things don't change that fast, and sometimes that's good also, because you know, once we develop a trading relationship with a country, we don't want that to disappear.
Those relationships, according to Bowman, are extremely important to the nation's corn growers. He says it's relationships that make trade agreements like CAFTA possible and ultimately create opportunities for growers.
It's going to open up some markets with our neighbors. You know, I always think it's really important to be on good terms and trade with our neighbors. If we can't get along with them, you know, there's a lot of other countries in the world that are willing to trade with them. But there's a lot of markets that are going to be opened up here, and we see it as positive, not only for our U.S. producers, but also for the countries and their producers that are involved.
Costa Rica still has not approved the pact and may not even join at all. Lawmakers there are not scheduled to debate the topic until February at the earliest. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that the Bush administration will ask Congress for another round of budget cuts in 2006. A senior Bush administration official tells the Journal the president's 2007 budget, due out in early February, will contain another set of budget cuts aimed at reining in mandatory spending. The official says the new round of budget cuts will likely aim for another $40 billion in savings over 5 years, which is what the current budget cutting measures save. USDA's chief economist says producers will face the same economic conditions in 2006 that they experienced in 2005. Keith Collins says higher energy and input costs pushed producer expenses up $5.3 billion last year, and there's no relief in the immediate short term.
For 2006, those crops that are very energy intensive, particularly nitrogen, and are irrigated and are using natural gas to pump their water, they're going to face some sharp increases in costs, and we're not looking at better farm prices.
Collins says relatively low prices have also hurt producers who grew the second largest U.S. corn crop in history despite a Midwestern drought. Officials at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association say it will have a proposal for USDA this week to become the gatekeeper of information collected for a national animal ID system. NCBA has advanced a plan for an identification system run by the industry since presenting a white paper on the subject at its convention last year. Last August, U.S. Ag Secretary Mike Johanns announced his belief that a private program would work better than a USDA-managed system. A five-year study produced by the North Dakota Natural Resources Trust says producers practicing conservation find more money in their pockets than those who don't. Sharon Clancy is coordinator for conservation agriculture with the NDNR. Clancy says the study examined production costs associated with buffer strips around wetlands.
The economics did stay the same, or it had improved, and three of the four farmers paid off significant portions of their loans, so we, you know, figured that that was a good indication that that the economics did turn out well for them.
Meanwhile, an analysis by USDA's Economic Research Service paints a gloomy picture for U.S. wheat production. According to ERS, U.S. wheat plantings are now about 30% lower than in the early 1980s. And ERS says wheat demand has fallen with changing consumer preferences and strong competition in export markets. Moreover, ERS says low returns have led to the substitution of competing crops for wheat, especially on the plains. But the ERS does have some mildly good news on wheat. ERS says low wheat stocks and prices above $3 per bushel will prevent a large decline in acreage, at least in the near term. In the long term, ERS says the future of wheat acreage in the U.S. will be tied, at least in part, to whatever farm policy changes come about as a result of the 2007 Farm Bill. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Well, a big welcome goes out now to those of you coming to campus tomorrow for the Crop Protection Technology Conference. I'll be there for the opening session and hope to see you then. If not, please plan to join me for one of the upcoming Corn and Soybean Classic meetings. And these are the regional programs sponsored by U of I Extension that bring the specialist from here on campus to a venue near you. The kickoff next week is at the Interstate Center in Bloomington on Tuesday. That followed by programs in Malta at the Kishwaukee College Wednesday and the Mark in Moline on Thursday. There are three more the week of the 16th. They'll be in Springfield, Mount Vernon, and Collinsville. I'll be on the road with the Corn and Soybean Classics those 2 weeks, so Dave Dickey will be in this chair. By the way, if you have not registered, no big deal. You can do that online or as a walk-in. The cost now is $50 and includes the coffee and donuts in the morning, your meal at noon, and the proceedings booklet. You can learn more about the Corn and Soybean Classics series at www.ipm.uiuc.edu. Just click on Conferences. Well, American farmers are looking to expand their operations by investing in farms in Brazil. Some have bought property and set up farms there, while many more are investing in American-owned operations. In the first of two reports, NPR's Greg Allen examines why U.S.-Brazilian partnerships make sense for American producers.
There are few places in America where farming is more important than Iowa. It leads the nation in corn, soybean, and hog production. In fact, it's a state with more hogs than people. Here in Clay County in Iowa's northwest corner, there are about 17,000 people, but more than 100,000 hogs. Many of those hogs are raised here on Dick Gilmore's farm near the town of Rossi. Gilmore walks over newly fallen snow on land his great-grandfather homesteaded more than a century ago. With his full beard, sunglasses, and long gray braid, Gilmore looks more like a biker than a successful hog farmer. In fact, he's both. Along with his brother Charles, Dick Gilmore collects Harleys and raises some 30,000 hogs each year in confinement buildings spread out over 50 miles.
Right where we are standing, this is a sow farm. So this is where we breed and farrow.
Gilmore says his hog farm used to be considered big, but no longer. Industry consolidation has wiped out most small farms, and huge hog confinement operations are now the norm in Iowa and across the country. But when it came time to expand, Gilmore says he and his brother decided to invest in a new farm, not here, but some 5,500 miles south in Brazil. Gilmore says one trip to Brazil was all it took to convince him.
It's a real eye-opener. I've been told, just to paint a visual picture, that if we go down the Mississippi River and take everything east, taking off a little bit, like taking off Florida and maybe a little bit more, but that's about how much ground there is to open up in Brazil. Yet, that shows how much competition that we will have.
The Gilmore brothers were among the first to invest in a new company based just a few miles away here in the town of Royal. Royal is a town surrounded by corn and soybean farms with fewer than 500 people. A few businesses in low-slung brick buildings are clustered along Main Street. But appearances can be deceiving. One of those buildings is home to Brazil Iowa Farms, a $26 million company that owns and raises crops on 23,000 acres of land in western Bahia. Its founder and CEO is commodity trading advisor David Cruz. Cruz sums up Brazil's appeal to American farmers in two words: cheap land. Improved, ready-to-farm land in Brazil goes for just $600 an acre, a small fraction of what it costs in Iowa and across the Midwest. Cruz says his company offers a way for farmers to invest in Brazil without having to move there and till the land themselves.
We view it, too, as someone is trying to make a decision. Gee, do I buy this $4,500 an acre land out south to add my operation here, or do I globalize a little bit, and do I go down and buy land there that's just as productive for a six?
There are now more than a dozen American-owned farms operating in western Bahia and more in other parts of Brazil. Many are corporate farms, but over the last decade, Brazil has also become a destination for a small but growing number of expatriate Americans who want in on the agriculture boom there. Phil Warnken knows many of them. Warnken is a former University of Missouri professor and an expert on Brazilian agriculture who now runs a consulting company, Ag Brazil.
Sort of a typical situation would be the family owns a good-sized operation, let's say in the Corn Belt or the Wheat Belt. They have a son who's recently graduated from Kansas State or Iowa State, and there are simply no opportunities for that son if he wants to farm, even though the family may have a good source of capital. These families are putting their sons down in Brazil, and the sons are doing very, very well. In fact, sometimes even better than the home farming in the U.S.
Along with the low cost of land, Brazil also enjoys other competitive advantages. One is the low cost of labor, a big factor in producing cotton. Another is the climate. In Brazil, Warnken says, while soybeans do well, cotton positively thrives.
Year in, year out, Brazil can produce three times as much cotton per acre as can the U.S. farm. This is very, very profitable. Even though the cost of production per acre may be the same, they're getting three times as much cotton.
Brazil is already challenging the U.S. on one of its main export crops, soybeans. It's only beginning to export cotton, but U.S. cotton producers are concerned. David Cruz has two big cotton producers on his board, and Brazil Iowa Farms is looking to expand the 10,000 acres of cotton it currently has under cultivation. Cruz is sensitive to criticism, though, that he's asking U.S. farmers essentially to invest in their competition. But he sees it another way, that by investing in Brazil, U.S. farmers are capturing the profit there and bringing it back here.
One way to compete is to buy them out. And essentially, that's what we're doing. We're going down and buying out the competition and controlling it in that manner. And I believe that we're a very aggressive form of competition in world agriculture that way.
Back on his hog farm, Dick Gilmore sees his Brazil investment as just one more way to hedge against risk. He says farmers routinely buy futures and crop insurance to protect themselves against weather and market fluctuations. He says it's globalization now that represents uncertainty for farmers. He argues that investing in Brazil is no different from what his ancestors did when immigrating to Iowa in the 1800s.
We have jet airplanes flying over the frontier now where my great-grandfather homesteaded here, and we still farm some of that land. Globalization, maybe as we look at it, is a new idea, but it's not really a new idea because my great-great-grandfather was thinking globalization when they moved to the United States.
That same pioneer spirit took Brian Willett to Brazil. Willett is a former economist who grew up on a Missouri farm. A few years ago, when he turned 30, he says he decided Brazil represented his chance to get back to farming. He moved there, spent a year learning the language, and last year planted his first crop of cotton and soybeans on 1,700 acres in western Bahia. Reached on his cell phone in Bahia, Willett said that farming in Brazil is not for everyone.
On one hand, you leave everything that's familiar and all your family and friends and the people you love, but at the same time, you get to meet new people and new experiences, to break new ground, to be the first one to farm something. It's You have to enjoy that kind of experience to be willing to come down here.
While Willett says he hasn't made as much money as expected, he still enjoys farming in Brazil. He says the most difficult challenge has been adapting to a new culture. Americans who go to Brazil for farming also find they have to learn to cope with a new language, an unfamiliar financial system, and a different pace of conducting business. Willett says one thing is certain. You will learn patience. Greg Allen, NPR News.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is WILL AM 580. I'm Todd Gleason. In about 2 minutes, we'll talk with agricultural meteorologist Don Day about the weather. Your local newscast is next.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. Illinois Senate President Emil Jones has undergone a procedure to correct a minor blockage in his heart. The 70-year-old Democrat remains hospitalized today at the University of Chicago Hospitals, where he sought treatment after feeling tightness in his chest. Jones is expected to make a full recovery, although he'll remain hospitalized for a few more days. Jones has received get-well wishes from Governor Rod Blagojevich and Senate Republican leader Frank Watson. A spokeswoman says that once Jones is back at work, Watson is likely to renew his efforts to get Jones to give up cigarettes. A man who's resisting a provision of the USA Patriot Act expanding government authority to see library records is receiving an award from the University of Illinois. The Robert B. Downs Intellectual Freedom Award goes to a man known in court records only as John Doe. Doe, with the help of the ACLU, is challenging a provision of the Patriot Act that gives the government more leeway in getting information about library patrons. John Doe has been identified by the Washington Post as George Christian, the CEO of a firm that manages patron records for libraries in Connecticut. But the Downs Award will go to John Doe and be received by a third party at a librarians conference in Texas later this month. A witness at George Ryan's fraud trial says the former Illinois governor cursed at a prosecutor who suggested that more should be done to prevent corruption. Ryan was Illinois Secretary of State in 1992, when the witness says that conversation took place, and two supervisors in that office had just been indicted for selling fake driver's licenses. A judge has sentenced an Indiana state lawmaker's son to 4 years in prison in the hit-and-run death of a Newcastle man. 25-year-old Andrew Saunders is the son of Indiana State Representative Tom Saunders, a Republican from Louisville. The Chicago Mercantile Exchange traded more than 1 billion contracts for the first time last year. The world's largest futures market today reports that electronic trading conducted via its Globex platform jumped 62%. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather by Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
Hello there.
Tell me about Argentine's corn crop and the Brazilian soybean crop, please.
All right. Well, the trend there recently, up until the past few days, has been fairly moist and a little bit cooler than normal. Some of the dry areas were helped out with some rain, but the trend now is definitely warmer and going to be a little bit drier. The Argentinian corn crop will see a drier, warmer trend there. Temperatures are actually forecasted to start going above normal now. And in Brazil, not as warm and slightly better chances for rain, but not as much as they've seen lately. So a little bit drier in both countries.
So this kicked off to be an awfully good growing season, but it's starting to dry up just a bit. Is that normal for these areas?
Well, yeah, this time of year, now that we're getting deeper into their season, they're out of their more moist spring pattern and heading into their warmer, drier pattern that they would see in early to midsummer.
So you wouldn't read too much into this yet?
No, nothing to jump on yet.
Okay, and then any other hot spots around the globe before you get to the local forecast here?
Well, still hot in Australia. They saw record heat in this past week. Central and eastern Australia growing areas will be quite hot and dry, while western Australia will see some moisture. South Africa, showers will be spotty. They're getting a little bit drier and warmer as well.
Now, I see in our own forecast that it looks like we'll be warm tomorrow here still in the Midwest.
Yeah, very mild. In fact, for another week, the pattern is going to be warmer than normal across most of the country. The exception will be the southeast United States for another week. The news is still very bad for those drought-stricken and fire-ravaged Texas and Oklahoma areas, although there is possibly in about 8 or 9 days, better news for those areas. There could be a fundamental jet stream pattern change that may bring moisture into those areas, and that would include the Midwest and Corn Belt, but it will be middle to the end of next week before it gets here.
Don, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Tuesday afternoon. And that is today's CMR. Remember to check in on our website if you missed something or you want to hear it again. It's all right there at WILL.UIUC.EDU. Just click on AM and then where? Of course, agriculture. Have a good day. I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. AM 580 Agriculture Now podcasts the opening and closing market reports every business day and our flagship show, Commodity Week, every Friday. Have our agricultural analysis delivered daily to your computer by heading over to our website, WILL.UIUC.EDU/AM/agriculture. There you will find the XML addresses you need to paste into the subscription window of your podcast software. If you need help, drop us an email at ag@WILL.UIUC.EDU.